Good evening, friends, and welcome back to the Front Porch. My name is Dennis Rogers, and I'm joined by Michael Daniels. How's it going, Mike? How is your alternate? This is weird. How's your Tuesday?
Sub-alternate.
How's your 5th of July?
There you go. We had a national holiday here in America, which was kind of founding of the nation. Celebration yesterday.
Independence Day.
Or
the 4th of July, call it.
Yep. So we were not able to record yesterday, but we are here today on a Tuesday, which is nice. Gives us an extra day. How was your 4th? You were out and about, so you weren't like with people. I mean, you were maybe with people, but not people. You know.
That's true. I spent the week very boringly hiding from the heat in my air-conditioned RV.
Yeah, no, that's probably most people in the world these days right now.
Yeah, I went out to get food a couple times. I did laundry yesterday.
Completely
boring, uneventful. I was in New Jersey. Actually, the park was pretty close to Atlantic City, so if I have a chance to go back there when it's not 90 degrees outside, yeah. I might do a little more. It was also a holiday weekend, so I was like, everything's going to be closed. What am I going to do? I could have gone to find fireworks, but like, I've been alive for 4 decades. I've seen fireworks.
Right.
I actually helped shoot off real fireworks once.
Yeah.
When I was in college.
I have gotten less and less fireworks as well. I mean, mostly it's because my kids have gotten older, but now I've got an 11-year-old, and that's what we were going to do today was go get fireworks. Crud. Shoot, we're gonna, because we didn't set any off, not that we needed to or anything, but you know, usually we'll get little fountains or things at least, but we didn't this year, just because everything was kind of a little rushed. We've got this house selling thing, so we're our times and days are, everything's just kind of really messed up, because it's kind of like being on call at a moment's notice. So they call us and say, hey, in 2 hours it's supposed to be showing. You have to go, so we have to, like, we're always keeping the house immaculately clean and everything picked up and washed down all the time, and then we get up and leave and have to go out into the world and come. It's just this weird, hard to plan stuff. Anyway, so we didn't get sure. fireworks, but we went out to our buddy Pat's this year. As we might have mentioned before, he's got a place on the lake.
He lives on the lake,
and they do fireworks for the people around there, and it's nice. He has a boat, so we go out on his boat and.
I did that last year.
Yeah, that's, and Shelly had asked if you were going to come this year. I was like, nope,
I momentarily toyed with the idea of driving back to Indiana, because I do have to come back at some point. We're doing a fishing canoeing trip right after Labor Day, first full week in September.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, at some point I have to head back that way. But then I had some minor car trouble.
Oh, right, yeah.
To get my Jeep into the shop. Did I talk about this last week?
Yeah, I think you had mentioned it.
Yeah. It's
Has it getting corrected yet, or have you come to that
point yet? Yeah, it's resolved, and I didn't have to disrupt my well in advance scheduled series of campgrounds.
Yeah.
RV park stays.
It's kind of a thing.
But that was, you know, I got it back. I got the Jeep back on Tuesday, the 28th.
Yeah.
And Pat's fireworks thing was Sunday the 3rd.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's this weekend. I would really have to, like, change all my plans and then drive back across Pennsylvania, Ohio. And then I would be back in Indiana kind of 2 months early for our for our camping trip. So I didn't do that, obviously. Mm-hmm. But maybe not. Well, it's obvious to me and to you, because you have not seen me.
Right.
I spent the 4th weekend in New Jersey, like I said, close to Atlantic City.
Yeah.
And now I'm back in Pennsylvania.
Oh, that's fun. We Pat's thing was successful. There were, I want to say there were less people there, but there were still lots of people there. We had 3 boats. Slashed together, tied together. So that was still a lot of people, and had a good time with that. yeah, it's just good food, good friends, good times. You know, I spent a lot of time out on the Sea-Doo. Lola, Shelley's daughter, likes to go out on the Sea-Doo. So I'll take her out there, and we just spent like a good hour out, you know, swimming around. And I flipped it once, and that was hilarious. But
you know, I have never ridden on one of those.
I hadn't until a couple years ago, when Pat's was the first one.
I like to call them boater cycles.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
That's a meme. Yeah, like the whole motorsports stuff is not really my jam at all. I've got my brother-in-law, and actually my brother David has a bike now too. They're, you know, motorcycle bikes.
Yeah.
And I tried to get Phil, my brother-in-law, to teach me to ride once, and I just don't have the confidence for it.
Yeah, sure.
You can't. Yeah, it doesn't work. You've got to really have a feel for it. It's kind of an
fair for the Sea-Doos too. Is like, if you're going cautiously and slow, or not really slow, but like even like medium slow, you're going to bounce around a lot. The natural waves of the lake kind of like bounce you up and down. But it's just a weird thing with boating. I like boats that go quick, and the Sea-Doos. Like once you hit a certain speed, it's like 30 miles per hour, then everything is smooth. It's kind of like you're riding on top of all the stuff. But you're right. You to do that, it feels very, very fast, and you have to like just have faith that you're not going to fly off. And
you have to have a feel for it. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's you know, it's not necessarily for the timid. But it was really fun. And the girls, there was two, Lola had a friend, and they got on the back, and Lola's great. She's like a little water bug and just, you know, screams happy, you know, things of joy when she's out there and was on the back. I also got her on one of those tubes in the back where they hold on and stuff. She's just like loving every minute of it. You know, we're going 30 and she's trying to reach down and grab the water. And I'm like, hey, chill out. But her friend, on the other hand, is like white knuckled, holding onto the security bars and not letting go of anything. And, which was
yeah, that would be me.
Yeah. So it was like, I didn't go hard. I wasn't doing anything at all difficult with the girls. They were just, you know, dangerous, going straight and nice and easy, but still that was really fun. And, yeah, good party time, good fireworks. You know, like you said, fireworks are fireworks. I do like, I prefer them when they're like to music. I guess I've been spoiled with Disney type stuff, with Disney fireworks. It's all a show and a story that goes with it. But occasionally my favorite fireworks are the ones that like make a smiley face or a heart, or because I'm just amazed that they can do that with explosions. You can control that stuff.
Speaking of Disney, I heard a funny anecdote. Mm-hmm. I don't know, anecdote is even the right word for this. You remember the 90s era Disney animated film, The Little Mermaid?
I think I remember that.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. You've seen it once or twice.
Once or twice, yeah.
Who do you think sings the most songs in that movie? Which character?
Sebastian.
Sebastian.
Yeah.
Sebastian has two songs.
I would think so, yeah.
The rest of the second place number of songs is a tie. One song each by Ariel, the lead, the titular Little Mermaid. Ursula, the villain. Mm-hmm. And the random unnamed French chef.
Sure.
Like, why does he get a song? Why does he have the same amount of songs as Ariel?
I know that song. It's a good song.
Oh, and the other, I didn't mean to include this, but I saw this somewhere recently too. Somebody pointed out that crabs are only red after you cook them.
Yes, they're like they're dark red, dirty red, but yes.
Yeah, and you know, when you see them live, they're like white, grayish, mm-hmm. sometimes blue a little bit. which makes Sebastian's look completely wrong.
Totally.
Crab.
Yeah. I mean, the shows made cartoonish sense, right? But not real sense. Right.
It's like when you see those paintings of horses from like the Renaissance, or I guess it wouldn't be the Renaissance, not horses, but like other animals that European painters wouldn't have seen, right? Yeah. Like a zebra or a giraffe or a lion or something.
Yeah.
And they're completely wrong, right? It's like a cat with a human face or something.
Right.
Very disturbing.
Yeah. To be fair to Ariel, for most of the movie, she doesn't have a voice. Right.
That's true. Once she gets up on, I was like, wait, she doesn't start with, oh, of course, after the, she does the trade off and.
Yeah. She has her song, which is one of the first ones they do. And then they do Under the Sea, which is Sebastian's. And then they do Ursula's. Right. And once Ursula does hers, the rest of the movie, she's got no voice.
So, right.
Which is funny, you know, the singing, you know, as much as you think of her as being the main singer. I wonder how many other ones are like that, where they're not very much, but. Anyway, man, I've got a coworker that's went out to Disney this last week, and I just can't imagine going out in the heat like this. I did it when I was much younger, but ugh.
Yeah, I was in Florida in February, and it was like Pennsylvania is now.
Yeah,
I can't imagine being down there now.
I really couldn't. I mean. That's just insane stuff. They got people dying probably down there, I would guess, or they're used to it. I don't even know. I'm going out to San Diego next week, so I'm excited about that. That's California, so hot is different. Hot is a different word out there. So I'm looking forward to that one, and I'm going to spend some time on the beach. But California is different too, because on the beach is different than on the beach in Florida. Like Florida, I think of on the beach, it's like you go, then you're spending a lot of time in the water, right? It's warm water. Sure. It's nice. But in California, you do not. It's cold water all year round. So going to the beach is just like hanging out on the beach. You know,
I have never been in California in the summer.
Mm-hmm. It's cold. Cold water.
I went to San Francisco once and didn't go to the beach because I was there for a conference one night.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to the south... like those suburbs south of LA, like Murrieta and Anaheim and Fontana. And I would go out to the beach and see people surfing, but they're like in wetsuits and stuff because it's February.
Correct.
And I'm like, yeah, it's February. Of course. It did not occur to me that the water would be that cold all year, even in the summer.
My little minute story was that I was so excited the first time I went to, it was LA when I first time went to California, and I brought my swim trunks and I made my way to Santa Monica Beach. I was going to go to the pier, and I just like so excited about dipping myself, my toe in the other ocean that I hadn't done Pacific yet. I got my shorts on, I'm all by myself, and I just run towards the water, and it got up to my knees. I was like, holy cow, so freezing cold. And it was mid-June. I turned right back around and said, okay, that's enough. I stepped my foot in the water.
Yeah.
But I immediately learned why they wear the wetsuits. I never had understood why you wear wetsuits, but they're insulating things.
Yeah, they're insulating.
Yeah. I had not known that. And I think sunny California, it's always warm all year round. It's going to be warm, but that ocean comes from the north. It comes from all up in Alaska and
right.
pushes downward. So anyway, yeah, I'm going to go out there and hang out at the beach. So that means, you know, actually what that means for me in California in the beach, which I really, really like, is sitting and reading. You know, it's not blisteringly hot on where you're like, you go to Florida, you can't breathe half the time, or the sun.
Yeah.
Like ocean, the beach itself, the sand burns your skin to death. In California, it's not like that. You could totally sit on the beach and have a good time. And there's several different beaches there that I'm going to spend. And my hotel is right down the street from Coronado Brew House, which is one of my favorite places in the country. So I'm going to have several beers, which is going to be nice, and be able to walk home.
Nice.
Anyway, I'm really looking forward to it. It's there's so much stress that's been going on with this house and moving and building and such that I'm going to try my, and I'm still right in the middle of it. So I'm trying to do my best to just kind of let it all go and spend some quality me time, which is always a good thing to do. You know?
Yeah.
Have the break. Okay. What do we have? Speaking of what we got coming up this week, let's talk about our movie, but let's do this a little backwards.
You say that, but we've been starting with the movie. Several times.
Well, I would say what I'm meaning by a little backwards is that instead of our movie, well, first off, let's play the music. What do you say? It's cue our movie music.
Sure.
Okay, so what I say backwards is that since we're talking about things that are coming up this week, and I've got a weird vacation week, I was going to say, it's your turn to pick this week. What are we gonna watch that I can watch out on vacation?
Oh, this is what you mean backwards. Okay.
Yeah. What do you got for me?
So this is an old classic. We've both seen this. I've seen this at least a dozen times. It's easily in my personal top 50.
Okay.
But I've not seen it. I'm sure I've seen it more recently than you have.
Is it an anime?
It's not. I pitched it for Christmas two or three years ago with my family, and they were all like, "We've seen this a million times. Why are we watching?" I'm like, "Have we not seen Christmas Vacation, Christmas Carol, and Christmas Carol, Christmas Story, and It's a Wonderful Life every year for my entire life?"
Right.
Like, we can watch this movie. It's from 1990. It is Joe Versus the Volcano.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cool. I have not seen that in a long time.
Starring America's sweetheart, Meg Ryan, and America's dad, Tom Hanks.
My high school crush, celebrity crush.
It's part one in the...
That's Meg Ryan, not Tom Hanks.
...trilogy. Yeah. Part one of the Hanks Ryan trilogy, comprised of this movie, Sleepless in Seattle, and You've Got Mail. We've actually seen You've Got Mail for the podcast a few years ago.
Sleepless in Seattle to me was very not as good as the other ones to me, primarily because the two main people who have great chemistry together are never together in the movie until the very last scene.
Right.
And that feels like a missed opportunity. And one of the things I like is those two, you know, interacting, but
their chemistry.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's a unique story. I thought you were going to say that it's mid because I've been talking to a lot of Gen Z people or our friends who are millennials who use Gen Z slang.
Trying to stay cool and contemporary. Yeah. No,
I mean, sometimes that's the right word. Like the word low key is solidly in my vocabulary now because once you figure out how it works, you're like, yeah, that's a good way to describe this.
It's funny with vocabulary. I have, that's a perfect example. Low key, I'll say low key as well. And a couple other things that, I mean, granted, I don't use every slang term that comes across the way, but you know, a couple of our friends will use them and consistently, and then I'll catch on to them and I'll say them at home. And Shelly is always then she immediately goes, "Are you trying to be a young kid? Are you trying?" I'm like, no, I don't. It's just, I can't not say low key as example. You're like, it's low key like that.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, there's a difference between, you know, doing it deliberately to try and fit in with a crowd where you're, you're cringy, as they would say,
right.
or cringe, which is works both ways because that's actually one of those slang terms too.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between that and hearing a word, figuring it out, and going, yeah, that's a good way to say that. Like, I could describe it a different way. I could use a different word, but here's this quick word that I have.
Right.
That gets me right there.
Conversely, you would never catch me saying bruh. Right? Like that's something that it doesn't fit in any kind of a thing and is kind of a generational thing. And if I would say it would sound totally creepy. Right? As you say, right? Cringy.
I for a while had a friend who was from Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the original bro with an O, not with a U-H.
Or bra.
Yeah, not bruh or bra. I have probably used bra in the, like, exclamation sense of describing, like, not addressing a person, but describing a character in a story.
Yeah.
It's, how do you say that? How do I describe this? If a character is being particularly oblivious or idiotic or is simping real bad.
Mm-hmm.
To use, you said squeeze as much Gen Z slang as I can, as much Zoomer slang as I can in this conversation. You just, you know, somebody says something to him and he has this boneheaded response and you're like, bruh.
That feels very sarcastic right there. You're doing that.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's like, it's one of the ways that our generation would say dude, like,
right.
Dude,
right,
and dude is one of those words like the F word where you, depending on the emphasis and tone you give it, it can mean 100 different things,
right?
What were we talking about?
So we just cut to kind of
our next movie, yeah. Joe versus the Volcano. I know you've seen this. I'll say I can already talk about this movie because I know it so well, but we'll save it for next week.
Joe versus the Volcano. Okay, cool. All right. So this week, though, we watched a show that was a recommended thing by a listener, Dave, and he had mentioned that we should watch a movie called Mortal. It's like a 2020. It was supposed to come out right at the beginning of the pandemic. But got lost in the shuffle of things. This one is a weird one because it came out and no one saw it because of the pandemic. But critics did. Like, critics got the advanced copy, so they got it. They reviewed it, and then nobody got to watch it. Right. Mm. So it's got this terrible score on Rotten Tomatoes. And not to say that that's not indicative of the movie or anything, but like that was one of the things, like if you read any of the articles on this movie, you read that like it started in a hole and now it had to live with just bad critic reviews for several years or just a few amount of people that watched it.
Sure.
Until it showed up on, I think it's Amazon is where we watched it or something, or Hulu. I can't remember which one it was. And one of the streamers. Yeah. And then people watch it now and just recently, like in the last year or so, it came out and people have been able to give legitimate reviews and it has much better audience reviews as normal happens. Whereas the Rotten Tomatoes score. So it's a weird thing that you've got another one of these critics didn't like it and you sit with that for a while. And do it. Now, I will say to address that kind of those scores, I don't think either of those are wrong. I don't think the audiences being, you know, like I think it's 70 some percent is wrong, because I think I can see that, and I can also see the 50% that the critics have on there, because they're all their criticisms, if you read through them, make sense. I think the movie is long, slow, plotting, doesn't do a whole lot of things necessarily new. It's got a new take on the mythology. I don't want to say because we're not spoilers yet, but
right.
It, you know, and it focuses a lot on a romantic thing, which doesn't quite necessarily feel like earned, or, you know, it happens quickly, doesn't make a lot of sense in places.
It's the kind of romance subplot that happens in an action movie, like in a Mission Impossible or Transporter, something like that, where these or Speed, right?
Yes.
Although I think in Speed, maybe it takes more center stage, but go on.
So I can empathize with those were the most of the criticisms. Conversely, I also tend to enjoy from a broad standpoint. I like the new take on it. I liked it's a low budget kind of thing, but it felt like it had high quality budgets. It had like the CG were well done. If not, sometimes a little too long. And
right.
I liked that kind of down to earth new take. Also, this, well, I guess I'll say that in the spoiler section. But yeah, I liked it. It reminded me really heavily of a movie that was out several years ago called Chronicle. It came out around the same time, like the Will Smith one did. I can't think of that one where he's like the bad superhero, but you know, anti-hero, or whatever.
Hancock.
Yeah. It's kind of that around that ish time. It feels this movie and that Chronicle felt like, the Unbreakable kind of type series stuff where it's shot in a lot of blues and browns, kind of trying to make it gritty and real and slow. And you've got heroes that are introverts and don't do a lot of talking. Yeah. And this one was that way too, where in the movie Chronicle, he gets these powers, develops these powers, and then goes on at the end. The big third act is this huge spectacle where he's outed to the world. And that's similar to kind of how this movie is. So I appreciated that kind of stuff that it does. But the ending is kind of an issue, which we can talk about that in spoilers. How did you feel about this in broad strokes?
That does not surprise me at all. yeah, I have mostly the same impression. All I knew about this was the title and the low scores. IMDb has it at a 5.9, which is an average of audience scores. I know I bring this up almost every time we talk about Rotten Tomatoes, but those numbers are not scores. They're percentages of those groups.
Yeah,
right. So if it has a 50% critic rating, that means half of critics gave it a positive score, which in most cases is at least 60%, like 6 out of 10. Although sometimes it's much more vague than that when, you know, it'll be some website, Den of Geek or something's top 5 must-see movies of the summer, that's a positive, right? Yeah. Which obviously is. But sometimes it's vague. Sometimes it's binary, you know, the thumbs up, thumbs down, Siskel and Ebert kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's all I knew. I didn't even know if this... I think you said it was a foreign language film, but there's no talking for the first, like, almost 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And so I was like, is this going to be no talking? Like, I'm fine if it is. Like, I can see that it's not... I watched it a little bit after I finished season 4 of Stranger Things, and the 9th episode of Stranger Things is a solid 2.5 hours long.
Yeah.
Needless to say, I watched that sped up a little bit, and also kind of listened to a lot of it. So when it started to get to the end, I was like, wait, are they with them? And they do weird stuff with which characters are where because of the upside down, which, you know, I'm not going to spoil anything about Stranger Things, but I was a little confused, but also not really invested because I'm like, this is fine. Yeah. And it's so long. Everything took so long to happen. I'll save that until you've finished it. And we've also ragged on Stranger Things 4 for being too long. But I looked at the runtime of this and was like, oh, an hour 40. That's not bad. It'll be fine. I don't think... Without spoiling it, I have anything else to say. There were things that I liked about it. It being different, I'm always a little more generous, shall we say, with foreign films.
Yep. And this was an interesting foreign film, right? Like, because half was in English.
Right. There's a lot of English, which you get depending on where. Like, a French film is probably not going to have any English, but. Yeah. A country with a lot of, you know, like Ireland, right? We watched Belfast, right? And that's all in English.
Yeah.
And I mean, Ireland's language history is weird because they were a British colony. But, you know, if it is one of those countries where they have their native language, but also everybody is fluent in English, then you'll get more. And the main character in this movie is American, so that helps too. It just sort of jumps in and out. And there was an interesting scene, I think that was this movie. I watched a lot of different things in the last couple of days. But there was a scene where a character is speaking Norwegian, I guess, and there are no subtitles because there's another character translating. Like, he's about to repeat everything that person is saying.
Oh, right.
So we don't have the subtitles spoiling it for us.
Yeah.
And having to read it twice.
Right. I dug how it went in and out of that. It was pretty great, actually.
Yeah, and so there were a lot of things about it that were interesting and fascinating to me. I kept thinking, well, I didn't keep thinking, but I several times thought of the Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Okay.
I know that's not Norway, it's Iceland?
Uh-huh.
Greenland or Iceland?
I think it's Iceland.
But, you know, pretty close geographically, similar kind of landscape. And it made me think of that. I did like that's a good comparison to those M. Night Shyamalan movies where it's, you know, doing something that's not, it's not novel or new, except in the sense that it's playing in a genre that we're well oversaturated with and then doing it in a completely different way. It's like when you see a romance story where the leads don't end up together at the end.
Right.
Right. Where you're like, oh, you're subverting this genre. And this isn't really doing that in the way that, like, you know, the James Gunn, the Suicide Squad and Peacemaker are subverting, you know, comic book movies.
Mm-hmm.
This is really just like, let's tell this thing from a completely different sense. And just like you, I found the ending unsatisfying.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so should we go into spoilers with that now that we've kind of...
Yeah, I'm gonna hit the bell here. All right, if you are still listening, we are going to spoil the story of 2020's Mortal. And so if you want to watch it completely fresh and blank like I did, you should skip ahead. I know we did final thoughts at the beginning because we're doing everything backwards this week, apparently. But, yeah, skip ahead.
So I one thing I want to say about this is that I did read later on about some of the director's comments you know, the point of things or whatever. I was fishing for a sequel, right? Is there a sequel? Primarily because the ending leaves you like, oh, it just started, right? Which is kind of one of my complaints is that it does take a long time to get into it. But it's hard for me to say that because I split it up into two parts because I just started it late. So it wasn't indicative of the show. It did still feel a little long. Slow. I should say. But anyway, the director had said like he definitely wanted it to be, had to be complete opposite of Thor, like the Thor movies. And he saw Ragnarok. The Marvel Thor. And obviously this is we're in spoilers. This is a Thor story. Said, this movie
would not comic book superhero Thor, like legit Norse mythology.
Well, yes and no. That's one thing that kind of like about it. He saw like Ragnarok and what they've done with the Thor since then. And he likes those movies. Like I love all those things. He says, but they're comedy and they're lighthearted and they're colorful and they're joking. Like all the things that I said aren't the comic book Thor, but are MCU Thor. He was like, I want to tell the other Thor, which is basically the comic book Thor. And that's what this is. Right. So it's, while it's not MCU Thor, it's comic book Thor, right? So this has a lot more.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a lot more like that. And he's much more somber. I mean, it's different. Thor's been out for like, 50, 70 years, something like that. So millions of writers written different ways. But it's the Thor that I kind of dig, which is like super powerful. And there's mystical things and history and Ragnarok and stuff like that where he's, you know, super powerful. Granted, we don't really get to see him as Thor almost really at all for the whole movie, which made me feel a little, that another thing that made me feel disappointed was that, hey, we got Mjolnir and we got his being able to control things and then it just ends. So I dug the realistic story of it, and there felt like a whole other a mythos where, you know, he's coming back from his descendants. We think he's a descendant, and he there's this whole cave underneath and the farm, and they just kind of give you little mythological points of touch points, but they don't tell you enough really about it. So I liked all that, but I also didn't get enough of it, right? They didn't.
Sure.
I don't know how they would do it besides exposition, but you know, I need to know more about why he's coming back. Why is it now? Why are the gods coming back? Is it just him coming back? Is it, what's the point of, you know, the farm and him coming going down there and finding Mjolnir? It just doesn't tell us a lot, which kind of frustrated me.
Yeah, it is very similar to, as we said, those M. Night Shyamalan movies where, like Unbreakable, where you're like, yeah, you really, it's played in a very realist, or not realistic, but, well, maybe realistic is the way to say it. Like, rather than focusing on the plausible, the fantastic, the fun, it's really plausible in a realistic way, in a way that is kind of not painful, but challenging to watch unfold, right? You're like, there's this guy and stuff is happening and he can't control it, and so he's afraid and everybody around him is afraid, and you know everybody's trying to react to this in the best way that they can. They do put out some hints to sort of justify the actions of the quote-unquote villain, who is not, like, she's not bad either. But understanding, like, hey, think about the world's population, and yeah, practicing organized religion is on decline, but if you add up the percentages of even, you know, non-church-going people who still are monotheistic, right? Between Christians, like, you know, practicing Christians, people with vague Christian ideology, Catholics, the entire Islamic world, like, what percentage of the population do you have there? It's at least half,
right?
If not, way more, if than, not yeah. more so. Yeah. Probably more than half, because really then all that's left is what, India, most of China, Hindu, Japan,
and
Hindu, Shinto, a handful of other polytheistic, religious cultures that are still, are still active. Not like, you know, nobody's worshiping the Greek and Roman gods. I mean, I'm sure there are a handful of weirdos who are just like,
straight up,
just like,
you're getting
Norse,
a curse put
right?
on you.
But there are no
right
like, I'm going to get a visit from Demeter or something, something like that. And so, you know, that you're like, oh, here's this thing. And it's not played for laughs or action or sort of, you know, inspiring superhero kind of stuff. It's portrayed in this very challengingly realistic way.
Yeah.
And that was cool and intriguing, but it takes so long to get there. And then the movie ends, like we said, in this really unsatisfying way where she dies and he goes berserk, and then the movie ends. And I'm like, oh, what? Okay. It's not even like, you know, the way that The Matrix ends, or the way that, I can't believe I'm going to reference this movie, but Passion of the Christ, where it's like, oh, the big thing has happened, and now he's going to walk forward, or he's going to fly, if in The Matrix.
Right.
And that's it. And maybe it's, maybe it doesn't get a sequel. Obviously, Passion of the Christ doesn't have a sequel, but The Matrix did, and it, you know, they were bad. But you have this, like, well, this is the thing, and he's going to move forward, and you know, whatever happens. Like, the story is told, the complete story. It's like the writing instruction of, like,
yeah,
when you get to the end of the story, stop writing.
Right.
Right. This didn't, like, yes, it was the end of the story, but the story was just the challenging, awkward, difficult part, which I'm sure is their intent, but it's still not satisfying.
You get to the end
and you're like, okay, he figures it out and he can control his powers, but he uses them to angrily slaughter a bunch of innocent people out of revenge. Like, it's not sympathetic, something like sympathetic. Like, it's, his actions are understandable.
Yeah. Right. They shot her brains out in front of him. Right.
Right. You're like, oh, he's angry and he lashes out. And his whole thing is that it's tied to his emotional state.
Right.
But, you know, now it's not, he's scared and can't control it. Now he's angry and he can control it. And he's still, and so, like, yes, that's the whole story, is him figuring out who he is and getting control of his power. And then that's it. That's the story ends. Like,
yeah,
every comic book movie has that arc, but that's, you know, the first act, maybe the first act. Sometimes it's the whole second act.
Yeah.
But then the climax of the movie is some kind of challenge, some kind of fight, right? That's why there's always an enemy and there's always a villain that they have to fight. Like, that's part of this template. And I respect this movie for not being beholden to that template.
Yeah.
But, you know, cliches and tropes only become so when they're done poorly, right? Like,
right,
there's a reason that we still do the, whatever it's called, the archetypal story that is the original Star Wars movie, right?
Yeah.
Or the hero's journey, whatever you want to call that, where you're like, you have this, you have an inciting incident, you have rising action, you have climax, you have falling action and denouement. Like,
yeah,
this basic Fry Takes Pyramid kind of storytelling.
Or at the very easiest, a big
beginning,
middle,
and end, right?
Because
it has worked. It has worked since ancient Greece. Like,
yeah,
you know, people, the audience goes into a thing with a set of expectations, and they can be, you know, the audience can be gratified by those expectations being subverted, but only to a certain point, right? At some point, you're not, you know, entertaining by being subversive. Now you're just frustrating the audience.
Yeah, right. Now the director slash writer, I'll butcher his last name. It's Andre Uverdahl, I think is his name. He's a Norwegian director. Has blatantly straight out said that this is just the origin story, and it is not the whole story, and it can't be, like, you won't, he's like, he said, I think in so many words, you won't know this whole story until there's other movies made. So whether the, like, okay, it was, in other words, it's intended to be just like part one, which is fine.
Yeah, clearly.
But one is that we talked about this with Dune, right? Like, Dune had part one in the heading. This one does not say that. Two, we don't know that there's going to be any sequels at all.
Right.
And they make the, it's very frustrating to me as a viewer to go into a thing and not realize that I'm just being strung along for a thing and then leaving the theater or experience empty. Right.
Right.
Because they just didn't answer anything. They just, it was just breadcrumbs is all it was. And again, I'm not knocking it. It's great. It's great for act one or maybe two, as you said.
Yeah,
but just a little frustrating. So anyway, closing this one out, I liked the show. I did. I just don't think it was enough, even though it was a whole movie. And the fact that we don't have a guaranteed second or third or whatever it might be one makes it worse, right? Like, I would definitely watch more.
Yeah,
but who knows? So that's my final judgment. Is there? It's a good one, but honestly, I don't know if I would. I would recommend it if you are mildly interested in some a new take on Norse mythology, but know that there, it's only just lightly brushing it at the very beginning of it. And it's not, this is the, yeah. this mortal isn't a whole movie, is what I would say.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think I would say that, or maybe assuming they get a sequel, maybe wait and see if a sequel comes out. And
agreed. Yes. It. Right. If they had a sequel, then I'd be like, oh, watch them both. Right. Then that would be fine.
Yeah.
So.
Of course.
Oh, crazy. Okay, so what are we? You know, here's something I'll run through another movie. I'll just say it real quick because some interesting to some, maybe not others. I know you haven't watched it, but I went and watched the new Buzz Lightyear this last weekend. Lola was not feeling in the mood to watch movies this weekend. She was just not feeling well. But I wanted to go out and watch movies, so I went and watched Buzz Lightyear. It was the new one out. My response is that it was fine. It's pretty much everything that you see in the trailers is kind of what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There's no surprises, really. There was one twist. There's one twist, kind of important one in Act 3, but it wasn't like crazy important, and it was only okay. And everything you expect to happen happens, right? You expect Buzz to make the right choice and Buzz to be the hero, and Buzz, and at the very beginning, it's very obvious he's being selfish and not a team player. It's very overt, right? How they're having him say these things. And you're like, oh, at some point, clearly this is a Disney movie. He's going to learn his lesson and have to come together with teamwork and be, you know, give up his narcissism. And that happens. Sure. I mean, surprise, surprise, right?
Yeah.
So it's no Toy Story, because Toy Story was always twists and turns, and then there's huge emotional swells. It's just fine, right? It almost feels like it should be a made for TV movie of Toy Story.
That's what I was going to ask. Did it feel like a what we used to call direct to video, and now we call direct to streaming movie?
Yeah, I'd go there. I mean, some things that tends to mean like it's low quality CGI or bad voice acting or something, but it had all good stuff like that. It was just nothing spectacular. And then when it's done, it's not like you were left with any lesson or any, like, I really love this character or that character. Like, now I look back and I can't even think of any of the characters that stood out in any way. So, yeah. The big drama over Chris Evans being Buzz was fine. I mean, in the very first opening thing, they tell you that this is the movie that Andy watched, and it's not Buzz, right? It's the toy Buzz, which is weird because it's not like the real Buzz. It's a movie Buzz in a movie world. That's a weird meta, right? It's a movie in a movie.
That is weird. I saw one of our friends posted that meme. It's like this triangle, and it's like the man, the movie, the toy.
Yeah.
And they're like, the movie is not about the man. The movie isn't about the toy. The toy isn't the man. The man isn't the toy. Like all these things. And like, I just sit and stare at it for several minutes to just try and figure out what the heck it was saying.
It's the truth. They should have put that in the trailer too, is the words at the very beginning saying, in 1990 something, a boy named Andy was, you know, watched a movie and fell in love with Buzz Lightyear. This is that movie that he watched.
Yeah.
You know, which is,
that's fine. A shame because I enjoyed the trailer a lot.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I didn't think that this would be that good.
It's not bad. There's definitely nothing bad about it. There's nothing bad to say about it at all. All the characters are good. They're entertaining and fun. But it's just very rote. You just know what's going to happen, and from every character, right? From the very beginning, you know what's going to happen, and it all happens. You're like, okay, there is one little, it's not little, but it's one main twist. Okay, so that's moving from that one. You want to talk about? Okay, wait, I got another speed one. Shelley and I have been watching a Netflix series that everyone's, I guess it's been talking about around water coolers these days, called The Pirate Gold on Adak Island.
I have never even heard of this.
Of course you didn't you? Why would you? There's no reason to listen to this. That's why I'm going to spend a minute and a half on it. It's just one of those like you what you used to see on the Discovery Channel, like reality TV of people are treasure hunting type stuff.
Okay.
But Netflix sponsored this one, and they went out and had four people go out and on this follow this pirate that supposedly left over $360 million of gold on this island. And so it's interesting from almost a little bit of a, hey, I didn't know about this history up in Alaska on the Aleutian Islands, you know. You learn a little bit more about that and something you'd never heard of before, and you know, see these people. And from some standpoint, it's like, well, one, I can say I'm on the last episode, so I don't know if they actually find any gold, but they've not found any gold yet.
I bet they don't too.
That's one of the things is like, I always think when I watch these shows, like, you know, if they had found $360 million in gold, it would be in the news.
Right. Before
they, you know, this movie got released, or everyone would have been talking about his, go watch the Netflix thing. This is where they found all the gold, you know? So I don't know if they're setting up for a season two, but the series itself is on a timeline. You can tell, like, they go up to Alaska in November, and the whole movie, the whole show, they're talking about how they've only got so many weeks to look and to search. And I'm like, well, that's dumb that you come here in November.
Yeah.
Cause like, it's going to freeze over and we can't be up here long. So that adds some unnecessary tension to the thing.
Artificial tension.
Yeah. And they, it's very much shot like those terrible TV versions of this used to be, where they give you some kind of really big drama with the, I got a hit. I found something over here. Hey, everybody come look, come look. And the drama and the music swells up and it's like to be continued. Right. Every single episode does that. And then at the beginning,
if it wasn't Netflix, that would be the commercial break.
Yes, 100%. And then the next episode, at the first 2 minutes, is like, oh, it was a Coke can, you know. Oh, I found a Hot Wheel. Every time, right? They don't find anything. But it's still entertaining. I'll tell you the one thing that it was, especially if you're watching with somebody. The most thing I did learn about it is that, even on an island, granted, this isn't a really small island, but it's still an island with hardly any trees at all on it. You just think, oh, why can't people just go there and have metal detectors and find it? You realize how this show lets you realize how much of a chore and impossibility that actually is. Like, even when you know that there's things here and it's been, and people have known it for over 100 and some years, almost 150 years, still not being able to find it. This show lets you realize why it's so incredibly difficult to find anything. But anyway, it's been fun. We're going to watch the last episode, and everybody's been kind of watching it recently. So, and everybody's like, I got to have a second season.
I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I watched a Netflix series, in Italian, in Italy, set in Italy, called The Astrological Guide for Broken Hearts.
Oh my gosh, Dennis. Is that the actual thing that you've been talking about in chat for the last couple of weeks?
Yeah.
You just put the acronym out, and I don't know if anybody actually still knows
what it is. Because it's very long. I don't want to type out all those words, and nobody has seen it except Pete, and Pete knows what I'm talking about.
Right.
Our buddy Pete recommended this series.
You just put AGBH, and we're all like, what is he talking about again?
Yeah, Astrological Guide to Broken Hearts, or For Broken Hearts, something like that. I mean,
nice. Okay.
Actual title is in Italian. But
I am certain that you guys said it way back when you started here, and we all lost it.
Yeah, when Trotsky and Fox were arguing over whether or not somebody should watch Stranger Things, and Trotsky's thing about, you know, it's... for, you know, looking for new things to watch, and it's a new thing and we like it, and Pete rattled off a whole list of shows that he has mentioned before, and the lead in this show, boy, at one time I knew the actress's name. Her character is Alice, spelled like Alice.
Okay.
But she's Italian. She is kind of like a shorter Italian Tina Fey.
Okay.
And she's younger than Tina Fey. She's in like her mid 30s.
Okay.
Maybe early 30s, I forget. She's a TV producer, and she's working with her ex-boyfriend and his new girlfriend/fiance.
Okay.
And she meets a guy who works in the building, who's an actor, who is big into astrology, like reading the stars, and gives her all this advice. And she has a new boss it's a little bit of a Mr. Darcy kind of situation.
Okay.
And there's nothing like profound or amazing about the show. It is just like I was saying during the discussion on Mortal. The language elements of it were interesting to me, right? Yeah. Like, you know, we talk about this every time we watch an anime or certain kinds of English content where there's a big focus on language and words.
Okay.
That stuff fascinates me, right? I don't have a lot of liberal arts education. I, you know, took 2-3 semesters of Spanish early in college and could not really speak it then and definitely can't speak it now. But I'm still always listening for like, oh, I know that this word, like there's a lot of overlap seemingly between Italian and French and Spanish, right? They're all romance languages. And so I hear words and I'm like, oh, I know what that word is. Or I'll see, you know, they'll say a word that is just the same as an English word, but pronounced with an Italian accent. Yeah. And then the subtitle will be something different. You know, they'll say Fantastico or something, and the subtitle will say, that's great. I'm like, why didn't you say fantastic? Like, they're clearly just saying fantastic. Like,
totally say it, right, yeah.
That stuff will keep me interested, even if the story is in a lull, right? Okay. Like, the actual story. So it's just a funny thing that I have. But it's cute. It's 2 seasons, and the story completes. Like, they did 2 seasons, and the end of the second season has the end. And I'm like, oh, that's a nice sort of, like, they had a story, and they told it. Yeah, it's 2 seasons instead of one, but
yeah,
there's no, like, cliffhanger mystery kind of thing.
That's
just
nice.
This little rom-com.
I dig that. And you liked it? It was fun?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All positive. What's the general plot of it?
So the TV studio she works for is kind of in dire straits, and she, you know, sort of panic. No, she does it while drunk to the boss. she runs into the boss drunk out somewhere. It's a like comedy of errors kind of thing where she's her own worst enemy most of the time. And she's, you know, newly fascinated, you know, it's like when you first hear about something and you start thinking about it all the time, she's fascinated with this astrology stuff. And she's like, we should do something new, something nobody's ever done. What if we did a dating show, but centered around astrology? And so they do this show, and it's like a new contest every episode or something. It's not really clear. It's a little bit like 30 Rock, where they're working at a TV studio and they show a lot of the filming and some of the drama, and like they're in the middle of shooting and she has to go take care of something kind of stuff. But they set up this show with the actor character who is the, you know, astrology hobbyist.
Okay.
And it's a dating show where they have one, you know, like The Bachelor. They have one bachelor, and then there are 12 potential partners who each represent a different star sign.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, and then while that's going on, Alice, you know, meets different guys and has, you know, different relationships in different situations. And or there are sometimes new characters, and each of those characters is a different sign too. Actually, come to think of it, there might be 6 episodes per season, and so each one with maybe there might be like an intro episode that doesn't have one, but then each episode is a different star sign. That goes along with that. And then the actor character has these little cutaway sequences where she'll find out, or somebody will find out what sign somebody is, and then they'll cut to him breaking the fourth wall, just like as if it's part of the show that they're making instead of the show that I'm watching.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Where he'll give, you know, a horoscope style advice for dating a person of that sign. They're like, Leos are like this, and they do something like this, but when they do this, remember this, because this, you know, then they're really gonna focus on this. And they do that at least once an episode.
Wow, I see. That's fun. That sounds like it was very fun.
Yeah, yeah. It was fun. Like, nothing amazing or profound. Just a fun little rom-com series.
I like that they did two seasons and we're done. That's kind of cool. That's kind of good. Like, you can watch the whole thing. And then
they had a story they wanted to tell and told it, and now are done.
Good on them.
Speaking of... I was going to segue into this after...
Oh, do you want to talk about...
Speaking of direct-to-streaming things, do you want to talk about... Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Mm-hmm. Let's do that one.
I always want to say Obi Kenobi.
Let's finish Obi Kenobi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was fine. I was less into it the further it went. I don't have really, you know, we talk about Star Wars a lot. I don't have really, how do I want to say this? I don't expect much from Star Wars content.
Okay.
Part of it's just to sort of, you know, I'm always talking about expectations. I'm like, it's a kind of hit or miss, right? We had the sequels, and that was a whole drama we keep going back to. And then we had Mandalorian, and we're like, oh, this is amazing. And then we had Book of Boba Fett, which even you and some of our other more diehard Star Wars fans are like, this is boring and slow, and
right.
I don't care about any of what's going on. Like, the best episode of Book of Boba Fett is the Mandalorian episode.
Correct, right.
And so we got to this, and I'm like, yeah, it's Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's going to be a bunch of nostalgia porn for the original series and the prequels.
Right.
Right? You know, Ewan McGregor stuff. And I liked it for a while. And then it got to wrapping up. It got to things finishing. And I'm like, boy, they're really, like... I don't know how much I want to spoil this. I guess I can say this in generic terms. The closer it got to the end, the more I felt the writers handcuffed by the existing canon.
Sure.
Right? You're telling this story in between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. And so you've got a whole cast of characters who can't die, who can't be... you know, who can't be dramatically affected in any way because a lot of things are already established. Leia barely knows Obi-Wan.
Right.
Obi-Wan and Darth Vader are, you know, have that duel. And, when I left you, I was a learner, but now I'm a master kind of thing. And so... Obi-Wan is on... Tatooine, but Luke doesn't know anything about him, right? So even though, and I'm getting a little specific with this, but you figure out pretty early that he's there and young Luke is there, right. and he's sort of watching over him from a distance. But they're really limited in the storytelling because of this existing canon, and it felt like. Like, they had stuff, the writers had stuff they wanted to do, but they couldn't. And so they, like, walked up to those lines and then just stopped or backed things off. And I'm like, now none of the character motivations make any kind of logical sense. I just see the writers going, oh, this is cool, this is cool. Oh, wait, we can't do that.
Yeah.
All right, well, have him just leave him. Have her just leave him there. have, you know, that I'm trying to be vague with this, but
yeah.
And so it got to the end and I'm like, okay, sure. Like that, I really had no feeling about it at all. And you know, some of that is me with Star Wars. I think people who are more invested in Star Wars or invested in good storytelling and good, like, worthwhile productions, right? Like we said that a little bit with Book of Boba Fett, where we're like, this didn't really need to be made. Like, who wanted this kind of stuff?
Yeah.
And yes, I don't know. I've been going for a while. So what did you think?
Well, this is a not a Dave Filoni production. I can say that much.
Sure.
And I don't mean to put him up as a Kevin Feige or things like that, but we've all said that, you know, Star Wars needs a direction. They need a creative director. They need someone who's not Kathleen Kennedy. Right. But Kathleen Kennedy owns it. Like, she's doesn't own it, but she is the anointed person, right. and has a long history with the franchise, with the brand, and with Hollywood. So she's not going anywhere unless she specifically wants to, right?
In general, there's a what's that studio? It's not Amblin, or is it Amblin?
DreamWorks.
Maybe DreamWorks is what I'm thinking of. There's one of those that's a three letters,
SKG? Something
in K.
Yeah.
Maybe
that's
SKG. Dream,
that's DreamWorks SKG. It's Spielberg, Katzenberg, and I can't remember the other G guy, but it was like the three producers.
Yeah. Anyway, go on.
She's not going anywhere soon, and that's unfortunate because we all know you and I feeling about her with the Star Wars thing. It really needs it. It's a great universe with a great, you know, story and great, just got a huge canvas that's wonderful and a great following, but lacks creative vision, except right. where it comes to Dave, being a lifelong hardcore fan of, you know, like geeky fan for sure. Right. And things like The Mandalorian are the reasons because of that. And people actually listening to him. Now he is an executive creative director at Lucasfilm, but he hasn't gotten his hands in everything. A lot of these things like this one were planned well before he became something, you know, a part of it. And sure. while he's probably consulted on a lot of this stuff, it's not like his idea to do it. Like, we need to tell this story and this is the story we need to tell. And you can tell when they don't have that. And Kenobi, yes. Do we need a story on here? Well, maybe. Maybe there's something to tell. But what is it that we want to tell? It wasn't very clear, right? And for all the reasons that you just said. So I won't necessarily repeat them. And it feels like, just like you said, you're seeing the writers. And they're feeling like the writers mm-hmm. don't have a clear vision. And this was made from a movie that, like, well, we like this character. And we like Ewan McGregor. And he wants to do it.
Yeah.
And the fans mm-hmm. like him. So let's just do that. Was the impetus for it, instead of what is this for? What are we going to tell? What's going to happen? What's the, you know, what's the reason for this? Which is, you know, I know a lot of people are like, oh, just because I want to see more. Well, that's, you know, you're going to get what you get.
Right.
And I will say, from that standpoint, the one thing that they did do really well, and I personally like, and I'm glad they have this show for this, is a little bit more expanding of Obi-Wan and Vader. I really appreciate every one of their scenes together. I appreciated their, I'm going to use the air quotes here, arc, because there's not a real arc, because you know where they're going to end up, and they end up in the same place they were before.
They can't, like, it's just like I said before, like the relationship between these two characters is bookended, like it's established on both ends, so they can't give us anything new that breaks the far end of that bookmark.
Yeah, and in that regards, I look at this series as one would the Silmarillion for the Lord of the Rings. It is an informational thing to give you more background to all these other stuff. Granted, the Silmarillion is much broader, bigger, and everything, but it's an example of it doesn't necessarily have a story that's going to change a lot of stuff, right? It just gives you more information. Like, for example, a simple question, which good fans of this whole universe might have, is how come Darth Vader or Anakin gets chopped up by Obi-Wan and is full of hate and anger, but then never comes looking for Obi-Wan, right? Right. Never goes to hunt him down. And this answers that, right? At the very end, it gives, moving into spoiler, you want to put a spoiler bell on this somewhere?
Sure. We're going to spoil the ending of the Disney streaming series, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Like, it has the Emperor tells him that he's holding on to this past and that he's still holding on to Anakin and hasn't quite killed Anakin. And then, Vader's like, no, he's done. I'm done with that stuff. And that's it ends with that, like the reason why he's done hunting him down. But we get to see that Obi-Wan basically spanks him every single time. Right.
Right.
When he puts his mind to it, which I appreciated too.
Yeah. That I liked those duels. I liked both of those actors, Ewan and Hayden Christensen, are both playing those scenes and those confrontations really well. Yeah. It felt pointless. And even the ending that you're describing, it felt to me like the writers. It's like, yeah, oh, no, we've set right. up this thing and it makes perfect sense. Like they felt like how many times in that last episode, there are at least three or four times, maybe not three or four, but at least two times where somebody leaves somebody for dead. And I'm like, that does not track for me with this.
100%. Hate it.
No justification whatsoever, knowing that character, why Vader would leave Obi-Wan without confirming that he's dead. Especially, I think I saw this on a YouTube video, somebody compared it to Revenge of the Sith. Obi-Wan does the same. Like, they both do it. Obi-Wan leaves Vader, and Vader leaves Obi-Wan. And, like, you understand at the end of Revenge of the Sith, right? Like, he's on fire. He's missing limbs. Like, he's not walking away from this. And he does, of course, we know. But it's understandable that he's like, yeah, Anakin is basically dead. But,
yeah,
like, in this story, Anakin is still living and now is in front of the Empire, right? Yeah. Like he's a legitimate threat to the galaxy, and Obi-Wan just leaves him, and you're like, okay, I don't buy that. And then when Vader has that conversation with the Emperor, that to me was the writers saying, wait, this doesn't make sense. Why would he give up this hunt and this chase and just forget? Because in A New Hope, and of course, A New Hope is the first movie, right? There's no canon. There's maybe whatever hints of ideas George has in his mind from the start, but it's brand new. But that's the end. That's the other end of this bookmark. So they can't change anything. That this has happened. I've said this like three or four times now, repeating myself. But Vader almost acts surprised, like he doesn't know who, not that he doesn't know who he is, but like he didn't know Obi-Wan was still alive. Or if he did, he didn't care. Like none of that is there. And so you build up all this hatred between them, especially on Vader's part, on Anakin's part, and then you just drop it. You're like, we've got 10 more years at least between this and A New Hope, and Vader just stops, and you're like, oh, well, and I almost can picture a writer's room with people like,
yeah,
what if the Emperor tells him to stop? Right. Like, well, that'll work. We just have to write up a good speech for him. Maybe he can say he's too emotional. He's letting his emotions hang. Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't ring true for me.
Well, you can, and I really feel terrible even saying these words that I'm going to say here, but we know that Captain Pike is going to die at some point in the future. We know that Spock is going to be purely logical person. We know that Uhura is going to be the communications officer on the Enterprise, but they can still tell these wonderful stories in between. with these characters, even though you know where they're going to end up. Yeah. And you can do it well. We know that. We see that. We're watching Strange New Worlds, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So that means that this is not an impossible task. And I don't necessarily say that, say, producers or even Kathleen Kennedy, who put this outward and said, let's do this thing, wouldn't trust that it's not possible to do that, because we have seen in other media that you can do these, even if you know where they are at the beginning and where they are at the end, that you can tell a great story. It's just these writers didn't, or it's a writer, I should say. It's not writers.
Okay.
And just didn't do a great job of that. And let's talk about, just for a minute, the other story that wasn't Obi-Wan and Vader was completely uninteresting. Like, I'm sorry, I'm just going to straight out say, I didn't like the Reva story at all. Like, she just was not a good actress for this film. She felt like a jerk the whole time, and it just didn't feel earned at all. I didn't mind her fight with Vader. That was kind of cool.
Sure.
But I was not invested in any way. And it should have been, because it makes sense that she would have this hatred for Vader, right? But it also doesn't make me understand why she went down the dark side and serves him and has been around him all this time. And she feels like a sycophant. None of it made any sense whatsoever. And then it gets worse as it goes on.
Yeah, I mean, I compare this kind of with Solo, which, you know, kind of flopped. I thought it was fine, but I'm a big Emilia Clarke fan, so that probably gave it some bonus points.
I liked it a lot.
From me, I did kind of eye roll at the things people eye roll at, like, this is how you explain his name, like, this was dumb. You didn't need to do that. You didn't need to do this. We don't, you know... Nobody really cares where those dice came from or any of that stuff.
Right.
Like, that's just goofy and pointless. But the story itself was fine.
Yeah.
And it was
I thought the story of that did the things that Kenobi didn't do. Like, it gave you a good logical filler for the character, at least.
Yeah. And it's hard because I think probably the most well-liked movie of the new Star Wars era was Rogue One, which was one of these, you know, fill in the gaps between existing stories kind of thing. And it was done so well. And like almost every other similar attempt has like they're not getting better. They're getting worse.
Yeah, they just have to.
Unfortunately.
I think they have to really plan it out better. One, they can't have... I don't think they can have one writer do thing. They need to stop doing that one writer thing. And they, you know, have a team of writers do this stuff, for Pete's sakes.
Sure.
But going back to the Reva stuff, I can't not speak about her because she's just so glaringly terrible, I think, in the whole thing. She in every part of it. Like, she kills the Grand Inquisitor early on, which is a pretty shocking thing if you knew the Grand Inquisitor was before then, even. And also, you know, like, how could he die? This is ridiculous. And then he doesn't. He just shows up, like, no explanation why he's not dead at all. Oh, yeah, vengeance keeps you going. Like, what? And then she gets stabbed by Vader, they just leave her. And she goes out and fights. Like, she just got stabbed with a lightsaber. You know,
and she hunts down young Luke and then doesn't kill him. And I'm like, why? Well, I know she's not going to kill him because it's Luke.
Right.
But why does she not kill him? I don't understand.
Why does she even hunt him down? Like, there's
why does she hunt him down? And who doesn't? Yeah. Like I mean, it's the same thing. The closer it got to the end, the more blatant the logic holes became. And it's like we often say, a waste of potential, right? Like, you got Hayden Christensen back, you got Ewan McGregor back, you did this, you know, face CGI stuff that was like, it's fine. Like, so much of it was so close to being good, and then just fell apart because of a, you know, not well thought out script.
Yeah,
the problem with Phantom Menace, right? You're like, what is this? Right. Like, somebody needed at least one. At least a second pass at this script, and it just like you took the first draft and made a whole movie out of it.
For sure, yeah. The actress of Reva, maybe I could say that she didn't deliver to give me emotional attachments, but not only did she do that, she also had a terrible plot. Like it wasn't developed good enough. Besides, you were a youngling and you invaded.
Yeah, a lot of it, like I blame most of it on the writing. Like a lot of the actors, I don't know. So I don't know, what they're capable of. The young Leia stuff kind of gets annoying. Like she's basically just acting like adult Leia already, which is cute for a minute, and then after a while it's like people grow and change. Like she's going to get to that point. You have to hint at the possibility of that, not have a 10-year-old talking like a 25-year-old. Like it
well on the other side, I would say I actually liked that, but that's different opinions on stuff.
I liked it at first too, and I liked her a lot. Yeah. And the more it went, I was like, okay, like this is you're taking this too far. And then that's another one of those inconsistencies where I'm like, they have a really close relationship for considering that in A New Hope she barely knows him.
Right? Yeah, like,
and then the same thing at the end. They're like, to keep us safe, to keep me whatever for whatever reason for reasons. Because the script says so, we have to keep it a secret that how well we know each other. I don't know how they work.
Well,
but it was basically that same kind of thing where I'm like, the writers painted themselves into a corner and we're like, let's keep it secret. Nobody can know that you know who I am.
Right. I mean, and that was really unnecessary because she besides the line, you fought with my father in the Clone Wars, besides that, she never sees Obi-Wan. Like he dies when they're running to they rescue her and they run to the ship and then he's dead.
Right.
So she never gets to see Obi-Wan Kenobi again or know anything about that. So there wasn't anything that they needed to keep secret or worry about their relationship because in the canon later on movies, they don't interact. So true. The only thing was the canon that you had to stay to was her message to Obi-Wan Kenobi. And that's fine. I mean, that you didn't need any explanation about that they did or didn't know each other. That isn't necessarily, that message doesn't say that, I don't know you or I've never met you. It doesn't allude to that at all. So it was just unnecessary writing that they had to keep something a big secret. It's not that big a deal. But anyway, I liked her. She was great. The new one. I always forget his name. It's the guy that's in Silicon Valley. He was like the fake Jedi. He was fine.
Oh,
that whole storyline was
he's a fake Jedi.
Unnecessary.
His name will come to me eventually.
But yeah, I'll tell you what. To wrap this up, the Hayden and Ewan parts were fine. The Vader parts were fine. Granted, we know where they're going to end up, but I appreciated the anger that Vader had. I appreciated that when they bashed his mask open and you could actually see the actor behind there and his voice mixed with the synthetic Vader voice, which was James Earl Jones. I really appreciated that a whole lot.
Sure.
And the fact that, now Vader has to bury his hatred and his anger, which, gives him the reason to be this calm, cool customer you see in the movies and wonder how he's channeling this dark side of the Force if he's so calm and collected. That's helpful. But everything else, which was at least 60-70% of the movie, was not interesting, was not well developed, was not well done, and completely nonsense from all of the standpoints of all of it. And as we mentioned, the stabbing people multiple times, living, running to kill Luke. And I can't drop the fact that she just heard a broken communique saying, I got to protect the child on Tatooine, and from Owen. Like, so she knew it was Owen. But she had no idea who this child is, why they're protecting him, or anything. Like, she's got no reason to hate on Obi-Wan to go kill his kid, or Owen's kid, or any reason. She just gets up and straight up goes to murder a baby. And you're like, what is this trying to tell us? I don't even know what they were doing.
Yeah, it's like it's my thing about poorly done nostalgia, right? You're like, well, the audience is already invested in protecting Luke. Right. So all we need is for her to go after him. The reasons don't matter because we are already, we know why he's important. It's that, it's the thing of like, you know, why don't people in Star Wars know about Jedi? Right. Like Jedi are the whole point of Star Wars. Well, they are to us, the fans, but not in the universe. Right. Depending on the movie, depending on the era, of course.
Right.
But, anyway,
I just think that Star Wars needs a smart movie. They need a smart movie or series that takes things like Rogue One, like you mentioned. Like it was a Dirty Dozen thing. There wasn't a whole lot of laughs in that movie. There's laughs from K2SO, and there's definitely some great humor in there. But it's mostly a smart, serious movie with emotions from all standpoints and good actors. It's a serious movie, right? And that's what I think. And I know a lot of people want to say, oh, you went Star Wars, you went swashbuckling and space and fun, and you got Chewbacca and stuff. But they were serious and cool, too. Granted, if you look back at it, Han Solo is almost a comedic character, right? Because he is a little bit lighthearted to all these serious characters. Right. So besides that, but I don't think the whole Star Wars franchise needs to be based around Han Solo's attitude. Right. You should.
Right.
A lot of it is a good, serious kind of story. And I think we need something like that. That's smart, taken well, taken seriously, and not played for just, you know, wizards with space sabers.
Right.
Because they can. There's a lot of good stories out there. And, you know, let's get Kathleen Kennedy out of the chair here. So I don't know what comes next for Star Wars. I think Ahsoka. Right. And I think Filoni is definitely involved with that because that's his character. And that's going to be very Mandalorian-ish. By the way, I want to say, as we close this out, I don't think Dave Filoni is a god of all Star Wars or storytellers. I think Kevin Feige has shown a track record to be a much better big planner than Dave Filoni is. I just think that Dave has a good history of telling fun Star Wars stories with his animated stories that he's been told so far.
Sure.
And I would like to see some of those type of stories put into the world. Okay, cool. Well, that was a lot. So on that one. We'll talk about we'll try to watch the next episode. I've watched For All Mankind 3 episodes. There's 4 out.
3 episodes of season 3.
So we'll watch the fourth one and maybe talk about that next week.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm still playing some Diablo Immortal. Hey, by the way, on air, congratulations for hitting your battle pass level 40.
I had a deadline, and I'm like, well, I don't. So we're talking about Diablo Immortal. Mm-hmm. They have a battle pass system where you pay a certain amount, and then you have a month, basically, to fill up this bar, get to this level. It's not level, it's separate, but it works just like the level. You have activities that give points for the thing, and you fill it up, and if you get to the top level, you get a reward.
Right.
And I got the notification that I had a week left. I'm like, a week left? And I had like 10 to go. I think you and I and Geek Scholar Chris and Trotsky got on and did a bunch of stuff one night, and that got me a lot of the way there, although we did a bunch of challengers for not giving me that meter. But anyway, I filled that out because I'm like, I don't really care, and I'm not really all that excited about playing, but if I don't hit the level, then I paid for this battle pass kind of for nothing.
Right.
And so I was like, yeah, I'll do it. So I had a week, and I did it in like 2 or 3 days.
I do still enjoy the random killing of demons, right? Like just bashing stuff. But still, now that the battle pass is gone and I've gotten mine completed as well, I'm still, as I always say, I'm still struggling for a carrot to look for in that game. I don't know what else to do from here. I'm actually very competent on Hell 2 now, where my guy can kill things fairly easily. But still, there's just, that doesn't mean anything. There's just nothing that really means a lot so far in this game. And that's difficult for me to push on. I went, in that same vein, I went to play some Overwatch because I know I bought the beta for the Overwatch 2. So I got on my PlayStation, got it, and I was like, I want to play it. Come to find out, it doesn't actually launch until the 16th. So I bought it, but can't play it until the 16th. But while I was there, I was looking at my PlayStation 5 games, and I saw a game that I used to play like Overwatch called Paladins. And I like it, but it's like another different Overwatch. But the big thing that caught my mind is that they're doing a like a season of Ruby crossover, like RWBY.
Ruby.
The anime thing. So they have a whole bunch of character skins for the, you know, the Ruby thing, and they've got voice packs and music.
A lot of
for
games
Ruby.
Have been doing that the last couple of years. It's not a thing Blizzard does, right? They do crossovers right. with their own properties right. because they have their
Fortnite
own
Fortnite does the crud out of it.
Yeah, Fortnite does a ton of that stuff. So yeah. That's interesting. I don't know if I mentioned this last week. Well, no, I don't think I would have because I did it last weekend. Maybe I did. Whatever. I resubscribed to Final Fantasy 14.
All right. We did mention that. Yeah.
They did a 4-day weekend, and I had my car in the shop, so I literally couldn't go anywhere. And I'm like, I'm going to play this 4-day weekend. And then the time ran out, and I'm like, you know what? A month of this game is the same as I paid for the Battle Pass for Diablo Immortal, and I'm kind of more excited about this right now. I already bought the last expansion, which I think is already out and everything happening. I had the collector's edition, so I think I could have played early access, but I was not subscribed when it came out. So I activated that because I got my highest combat job to level 70, which unlocked the two new classes or two new jobs, Reaper and Sage, which I don't know much about either one. Reaper is melee DPS with a scythe, like a Grim Reaper. Okay. And Sage is a healing class that seems to deal with, well, I was going to say star sign stuff, but there's already Astrologian, however you pronounce that. This one, I don't know. I unlocked them both, but haven't really tried them at all. I'm still going through the main story, doing a bunch of cool. This expansion goes to a vaguely Eastern themed place. I compared it. I kept calling it Pandaria.
Yeah, sure.
But it's more, in some ways, it's more on the nose than Pandaria. You go to a city that's clearly like a medieval Tokyo, kind of a harbor town, harbor city. Yeah. And then you do that zone. And in the next zone, it's really like Mongolia, right? The steppe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's Final Fantasy. Going through the story, right. There are a lot of cutscenes, a lot of really beautiful, doll-like looking characters, you know, friendly community, all that.
Yeah.
All that.
For sure. We remember we talked about that for a long, that game for a long time. It's still the same. Still good stuff.
Yeah.
I
appreciate quick, that it's always there and doesn't drastically change.
Yeah, for sure. One thing I was going to say about that Ruby thing was that when I got done with the Battle Pass of Diablo and I was on that looking for that thing and I come across the Ruby thing, it's all unlocked through the Battle Pass system, which, because that's the way that game where it has stuff.
Monetized,
So I was like, oh, you know, $15, I'll get the Battle Pass and it'll last 45 days, which is longer than the Blizzard one, Diablo one. And it's got less levels. It was like 30 levels instead of, 30 instead of 40. I'm like, good, I'll play this and have a good time. And I played through Overwatch and don't care about my levels too much. And it just kind of happens. But I will say this moves really slow. Like, it's taken 3 days to get like a level. Each game takes a long time, and then they're fun, but then they don't give you a whole lot of experience for each thing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden, that's the first time I thought, like, I paid for this $15. And when you played Diablo, it moved. Like, you were on, you could always get like a level a day without having to think too much about it. And you got good rewards.
It's a mobile game. So there's a daily quest doing all of the daily stuff for Diablo, like the bare minimum of once per day rewards.
Yeah.
You can do in 5 minutes, like maybe 10. Like, fill up to sort of be like the most efficient at the Battle Pass thing is this bar that you can fill up 3 times. And if you want to do that, that's going to take a couple hours.
Right.
But if you do that every day, you'll finish the battle pass in a week.
Right.
Now, I almost never, I think I did it once when all four of us were on and we played for several hours, but I much more often, I got on once or twice a day for 5 or 10 minutes, and right. then a few evenings spent 2 hours
right.
in the game and got close to not finishing it for the hour. But yeah, this sounds like a kind of thing for people who, you know, as we say, lifestyle games, where like yes. they're really yeah. doing the competitive stuff the way that I used to play Heroes of the Storm. Like I was yeah. never competitive, but I played it, you know, at least a couple matches a day, almost every day.
Yeah, this is definitely one of that. And I think yeah. like I realized that, okay, if I can get level 9 and get the character I want unlocked, that's fine. I'm not going to, I've kind of already said, even though it's got 45 days, that I'm not going to be able to get the level 30,
the whole
you know,
thing.
Character skin mm-hmm. lock. And that makes me a little sad because I paid the $15. Right. I don't want it just handed to me. I want to do stuff, but it just, you know, that is, it feels like a grind now. Like now when I get on, I have to get on that. I have to grind because I'm going to have to do these matches to get this stuff. Right. And that's not anything that the Diablo one felt like to me. And
sure.
I will say I've done a couple battle passes for games before. They're more like Paladins than they are like Diablo. Most times you'll pay your money and not get the full thing out of them, which doesn't make right. a lot of sense to me. I think if you pay $15, you're basically paying for that cosmetic with some fun along the way to get to it, right?
Yeah, I mean it all. That's a whole different conversation.
It's a whole,
but it's it's the compromise, right? Where you're not buying a thing, you're doing a sort of subscription, and you're getting a reward for it, but you still have to play. You still are sort of grinding for that gear. You know, the same if we go back to the MMO model, which Diablo Immortal is very much an MMO. It's a trade-off between working hard and earning a reward versus just buying it. And a battle pass yeah. is somewhere in the middle. And so, you know, then it depends on, like, where is it on the scale? Like, what kind of player is this for? Right? I mean, and right. Diablo Immortal did that, too. There are two tiers of battle pass. The, right. You know, the lower tier, I think, gives you the big cosmetic up front. Well, they both do. They give you the weapon cosmetics up front. And then, you know, if you grind all the way to the end, you get a bunch of rewards. But it's more, the cheaper one is for a more casual player, I think.
Yeah, right.
Where I did the more expensive one, and it has a full armor skin cosmetic.
Yeah.
But only at the end. I got the weapons at the beginning, so that's the, like,
right, yeah,
here's
yeah.
your reward for buying it, but if you want the full ensemble, you're going to have to play the game enough, you know, that you're not just buying it.
Yeah. And that feels good as long as you're kind of make it, it makes you have progress. And I really enjoyed that a lot, and I'm not really looking forward to this other one. So, you know, another thing that kind of drew me into it, made me buy, is like when you get the battle pass, you get an EXP bonus for it. I'm like, oh, that's great. That'll make it go. That'll, you know, so I couldn't like tell that it was going to go slow beforehand. I figured with the bonus, it's going to make it go on a nice little clip now, and I'll be able
faster.
To get this. But it really wasn't that much at all. So anyway, I do like the game. I'm still playing it. It's nice to get back into it. I've not played it in over a year, and there are several characters now that, because I played when I bought it, I paid the initial, it's not Kickstarter, but like basically Kickstarter package where you pay the big money up front and you unlock all the characters. And this game has a you buy the characters kind of like type thing, how Diablo or Hearthstone had, not Hearthstone,
okay.
Heroes of the Storm, and all, a lot of the other games. Or you buy seasons where you buy all the characters in the season that are released. But my original pack that I bought from being a starter of the beginning unlocks everything forever. So I have a lot of characters that I haven't played, which are fun and neat and cool. And that's fun. So I'm having a good time playing. I don't mean knock Paladins. It's a great game. It's really, there's some things that can do better, mainly needing a roll queue. But it's a good game. It just, I'm not a fan of their battle pass system. And sure. I do like the Ruby stuff. So
yeah, it seems designed for a more hardcore.
Yeah, definitely not more casual type stuff.
Maybe not hardcore, but core player base.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, next week we will talk about For All Mankind and maybe Stranger Things.
Right.
Hopefully.
If I can get 17 hours on my vacation to watch it.
Right, right. And our movie is Joe vs. the Volcano.
Yeah.
All right. You've been listening to The Front Porch. This is episode 253. Thanks to our friends at LRM Online. Check them out. They got reviews on all the things. If you want to reach out to us with your hot takes on the Star Wars mismanagement or suggestions for things we should watch and discuss, you can do that via email. Our address is frontporchpod@gmail.com, or you can go to our website, frontporchpodcast.com, where there are contact forms, show notes, and all that good stuff. If you enjoy The Front Porch, please consider subscribing on the podcatcher of your choice. And while you're there, if you would leave us a review, hopefully positive one, we always appreciate that. It helps us out a lot. As always, thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Dennis.
And I'm Michael.
For The Front Porch.
Night, everybody.
See you next time.